WGN Radio, thanks for dialing in on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We do this every weekday from noon to 1. Today we're talking with Greg McBride, the Bankrate Chief Financial Analyst. Greg, let's talk a little bit to start about what the Fed has said they are going to and not going to do. What's your thought about that?
Yeah, the Fed has moved to the sidelines, John. They did cut interest rates by a full percentage point in the latter portion of 2024, but the progress on inflation really stalled out. The goal is to get it down to 2%, and we've been hovering in this holding pattern just below 3% for quite some time. In fact, if you look at the consumer price index, the last 18 months, it's gone from 3.1% to 2.9%. So that's a whole lot of not much in 18 months. And so Fed's moved to the sidelines. They certainly want to evaluate incoming inflation data and want to be comfortable that that resumption toward 2%, the target is underway before they feel comfortable cutting rates. And frankly, it's just hard to see how they're going to get enough data to confirm that anytime soon, that it's going to take a period of months.
So there was talk, and there always is, about how many we'll get in the next quarter or for the year. Now, maybe 0, 1, maybe 2. That's about the limit on that. Is that how you read it?
It really does all hinge on inflation. If inflation does continue to moderate and they feel like it, even if it's moving slowly, but it's moving in the right direction toward 2%, then it opens them up to cut rates. And, they could cut rates 2-3 times, depending on the condition of the labor market or the health of the overall economy. But if inflation doesn't cooperate, then they're not going to be able to cut rates. And then, the hurdle or to be able to cut rates, then all of a sudden you'd have to see a sharper downturn in the labor market, something careful what you wish for, right? So, it really does hinge on inflation more than anything else. The economic growth is really strong, continues to be solid, and the labor market, which has softened a bit, you still have low unemployment and consistent job growth. The only fly in the ointment is inflation rate.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because that was some of the stuff I said yesterday when Terry Savage joined us with a guest who has a very good background and a very good track record. And he is pert near bearish on the next 18 months. He thinks that we are teetering on a brink. And he said this is the time to minimize your exposure in equities. And he talked about the Fed and various other things, but he doesn't see such a rosy picture. Do you have anything to say about that?
Well, valuations in equities are certainly
stretched. He talked about that, And he talked about that. Keep going.
It's quite frothy, right? So, things are really sort of priced for their earnings perfection. Anything less than that is certainly going to be a recipe for volatility. You've got, as we saw earlier in the week, right? The name of the game in tech is that it's only a matter of time before a competitor comes along with something that's better, cheaper, faster, more efficient. And when that happens, that's another thing that calls into question those future earnings expectations that underpin stock prices. And as we saw earlier in the week, in that instance, investors tend to sell first, ask questions later. So whether the economy stays on a good track or not, I still see an environment where we're going to have a lot of volatility. But I think individual investors have a time horizon that's greater than 18 months. And so you've got to look beyond that. So, regardless of what the near term forecast is, you've got to stay focused on those longer term goals. And one last thing I'll say on that, John, if we think back, say a year and a half ago, the forecasts for a recession in 2024 were widespread. About 3 out of 4 economists expected a recession in 2024. Didn't happen. Well, if you had bailed out of equities in an effort to avoid that recession, you missed out on a 25% gain in the S&P last year. So kind of goes back to the old Peter Lynch moniker, where he used to say that more money's been lost trying to avoid corrections than have been lost in the corrections themselves.
It's interesting, because he said that if you aren't It depends on your horizon, your timeline. But if you aren't comfortable, if you can't ride out a 15%+ loss, then maybe you ought to minimize your exposure in equities. And, you know, the number that he started with was 70%, which is a lot for any age group. But certainly if you're at retirement or nearly so, that's pretty aggressive. And he said if you're in that neighborhood, you should definitely think about pulling back. He wasn't picking the market. He wasn't forecasting a when, but he did not have a good feeling about the future. And then he historically pointed to other times like this when everything seemed to be, I think the word you used was rosy, and then it fell very quickly. So again, that was just some of what we heard yesterday.
Yeah, I think, you know, assessing your own risk tolerance, you know, everybody's got a high risk tolerance when the market goes up. It's when it goes down that you really find out what your actual risk tolerance is. And
yeah.
So I think, you know, particularly with so many investors sitting on big gains and, you know, a handful of stocks, that, you know, reevaluating your risk exposure and your risk tolerance,
yeah.
Maybe rebalancing the portfolio, always, always sound advice.
Well, they talked about the Magnificent Seven, and he said, what about the unmagnificent 493? Actually, that was a story, and it was either the Wall Street Journal or New York Times today. But again, it was a pessimistic outlook that if suddenly we've realized that NVIDIA isn't the only kind of chip and that so many other companies are sort of predicated on that technology, then maybe these frothy valuations are going to come home pretty quick. Again, I don't know why I'm so pessimistic today, but those are just a couple of things I've heard of late.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it kind of comes back to the valuations, right?
Yeah.
You know, valuations are really kind of priced for sort of that perfect environment. Anything less than perfect, whether it's from an economic standpoint, an interest rate standpoint, a competitive standpoint within particular business sectors, you know, certainly, you know, could be a recipe for the type of volatility that we had seen earlier in the week.
So be advised, Greg McBride, the Bankrate Chief Financial Analyst. Nice to talk to you, Greg. Thanks for saying hi to us today.
Always a pleasure, John. Thank you.
Ree Fowler is the senior writer at CNET. Talk to me about DeepSeek. It's all the news these days, and I hadn't heard about them until last week. What should I know?
Yeah, most people hadn't. This was a bombshell of a story this week. This is a new, allegedly cheaper Chinese artificial intelligence startup. It stunned the markets and AI experts in the U.S., but it's here, and it is one of the top downloaded apps in the app stores these days.
How does it work? What does it do? How well does it do what it does?
You know, it's a chatbot, just like ChatGPT and Google's Gemini. You know, it does a lot of the same kinds of tasks for you. But, you know, China is saying that this was something that was pulled together, you know, a lot cheaper than those companies. And it will also operate using less energy and less money to do that. And that really rocked stocks like NVIDIA, which have been, you know, they've been getting a lot of money from AI companies to build those in the U.S. And cheaper competition is not good for them.
17%, I recall, was the one-day loss for NVIDIA, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you can look at it as a buying opportunity, too, because the stock has been going up and up and up and, you know, is this a speed bump or is this a game changer? You know, it remains to be seen.
Well, so what is the point? If I have, if NVIDIA makes a chip and that's been used to help drive this artificial intelligence world, somebody else comes along with a chip or a new app. But the cost that we're talking about, the efficiencies, relies in the servers that these apps use. Is that it? Is that what it's all about? Because therein lies
yes.
The energy cost, right?
Right. The servers and the energy. And if you can cut those costs, you cut your overall costs in general. And, you know, it's just like anything else when, you know, you get cheaper competition from overseas, that doesn't bode well for American companies.
So does this mean then that these various artificial intelligence apps have their own servers, giant warehouses somewhere in China that are being used by the app to actually generate the answers that you get? Is that it? Is that the technology and how it works?
You know, it's to an extent, yes. And, you know, if you can cut those costs, if people are going to use that instead of ChatGPT and things that are more expensive, because companies will take the AI and they'll use it for their own kind of enterprise software, you know, put their own customizations and things like that on it. Maybe they'll choose this instead if it's cheaper to operate.
I can get that on my phone here in America, right?
Sure.
I wonder if the government of the United States is going to, you know, look warily, look on that the way they did TikTok, because it's a Chinese company.
Right. And that, you know, and that's something that I'm definitely looking at as a security reporter. You know, anything that goes into an AI becomes part of the AI. You know, the monster eats it and it becomes part of the monster. And that's a big enough security issue when you're talking about U.S.-based companies. But, you know, people are, you know, understandably a little concerned about Chinese companies. If we're worried about TikTok, maybe we should be worried about something like this, too.
Meta has paid not Donald Trump per se, right, but some foundation or something to do with him, $25 million. Can you catch me up on that?
Yeah, they're talking about calling this more of a charitable donation, but it's a settlement to make a lawsuit filed by President Trump go away. $25 million in total, with about $22 million of that going to the nonprofit that will become Trump's future presidential library. The rest is for legal fees and other costs.
Why was the president suing Zuckerberg's company?
Well, he was a bit angry after Meta shut down his accounts after the January 6th problems at the Capitol. And, you know, said that it was illegal censorship of the American people. You can debate that, definitely. But there's definitely been a change in the attitudes and the practices of social media companies and other tech companies following Trump's election. You know, they were all there at the inauguration, standing behind him. A lot of them, including Meta, gave money, $1 million, in fact, Meta did, to his inauguration. They're trying to make nice, and this will help those problems go away.
It seems so transparent and so transactional. I mean, after January 6th, Donald Trump wasn't the president. They shut down his account because what happened January 6th. He sues them because he doesn't like that. And Meta, that can print money, then says rather than bear the cost, we're going to give $25 million away. And that seems to be, cowardly isn't the right word, but I mean, they could have shouldered that. So there must be more to it than this. I guess we know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, with most litigation and most lawsuits, whether you're talking about, you know, a slip and fall involving an average person or something huge like this, things get settled because it's far more expensive to fight something, even if you win, than it is to just settle it and make it go away and just eat that cost if you have the money to do that, or insurance in the case of a lot of companies. But, you know, The political climate has changed a lot, and, you know, it just comes on the tail of Meta saying that it's not going to fact-check posts anymore, you know, that it's more about just kind of letting free speech roll, for what it's worth, and not taking down stuff that a lot of people would argue is disinformation.
Bree Fowler is a senior writer at CNET. Okay, Bree, let's talk next week. Thank you for your help today.
Thanks for having me.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. I'm John Williams. Tom Gimbel, if you're listening, turn off the radio now. Pete and I are laughing. We're about to. Tom Gimbel is the guy from LaSalle Group. He's the guy that is a expert on employees and job hires. He recruits people, and he is very much a back-to-the-office kind of guy. We talk about that a lot with Tom. Here's Amanda Hoover now, who is a senior correspondent at BusinessInsider.com, and she's got a story, The Sneaky Rise of No Work Fridays, Employees Taking Three-Day Weekends. Amanda, you're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. Thanks so much for having me.
I suppose we know a thing is a thing when it gets a name, and you call it Gentle Fridays or Quiet Fridays or Sneaky Fridays. Mm-hmm. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, we're talking about, you know, lots of people are still hybrid workers, if not fully remote. And on Fridays, some people are doing a bit less work or no work at all. You know, these aren't necessarily people that have been given a 4-day work week by their employers. That's something that's still pretty rare. But instead, they are just sort of taking some time for themselves that day, and seemingly it's going unnoticed by their bosses, and they're kind of getting a 3-day weekend every weekend.
I wonder what kind of employees there we're talking about. If you're a school teacher, you don't have that luxury. If you work at a factory, you don't have that luxury. Who has this luxury? Who are we talking about?
Yeah, these are going to be, you know, largely white-collar workers who work behind their computer. And it's especially, I think, easier to do this if you can push all your work to the first 4 days and then, you know, get all of that done, and that just carry your phone around with you to answer emails or questions that might pop up on Microsoft Teams or Slack. So, you know, it can still appear that you are very available and working when you might be totally not. And I talked to people that have done this, and they were running errands or at the bar or even on the ski slope on some of these days.
Well, without getting into the working hard versus working smart, and I think it's, if you had to pick one, you'd ask your employees to work smart rather than work hard. Working smart can be both. I guess working hard could be as well, but I mean, I guess the question is this necessarily a bad thing? If people are happy and they're accomplishing their work by working hard Monday through Thursday, and they're at Costco on Friday, how do we score that?
Yeah, I mean, it seems that this is something that's really helping employees with burnout and to have some personal time to get things done that they need to. Maybe it's doctor's appointments, Costco runs, catching up with a friend even. There are even companies that are allowing this. I spoke to two for the story. One has a 4-day work week. Another has sort of a 5-day optional work week twice a month. So we're seeing that there are some benefits to this. And I think especially there are benefits when you have that agreement and trust among the employer and the employee.
Right.
When you just have employees doing this on their own, it could, you know, start to erode some of that trust. Versus the companies that are instituting this are really going to be able to possibly, you know, retain employees better by giving them that time and showing that they trust them to act like adults and get their work done.
Well, that's one thing, right? If you and the employer have that sort of agreement that Friday I might be at breakfast with my friends and I'm not going to really do much, but I'll have my phone with me at all times, that's one thing. The other thing is you're a remote worker. You never go to the office, but you're not working hard on Friday, and you don't want your boss to know that. You're talking about that population as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where, you know, it's harder to say if this is good or bad, because those people that are doing this sneakily, you know, they're really feeling more well-rested, and they tell me, you know, that they're still getting good reviews at work. They're still getting their work done. So it seems like not a problem, perhaps. But, you know, if they were to get caught by a boss, it could create tension in that relationship. It could obviously lead to discipline, things of that nature. So there's definitely still some issues with doing this on the sneaky side.
If you're one of those people, I'd like to know, tomorrow's Friday, what are you going to be doing? 312-981-7200. You can just text in, do you know somebody like this? Are you somebody like this? What is your Friday at work like? Tell me the story of somebody, Amanda. Give me a for instance of how this plays out.
Sure. Yeah. I spoke to someone who works in public relations, and for a while this job was fully remote. You know, when she started working there, that was the understanding and the agreement. Last year, they went back to a more hybrid model where she was expected to be in the office 3 days a week. That resulted in an hour commute each way. She had to lease a car, felt really burned out by this sudden change, felt that it was, you know, easier for her to meet her needs and work from home and get her work done. So she doesn't have to be in the office on Fridays. That's part of the hybrid agreement. And on those days, she does a little bit of work or, you know, virtually none at all, tries to log off as soon as possible, keeps her phone with her, but might go to the gym, watch Netflix, relax. Like she described to me is that that's really a day to rebuild her social battery. And she also said that sometimes she goes skiing and just brings her laptop. And if anything were to pop up, she can log on in the lodge really quickly. But that day is something that she's really taken back for herself and views it really with no remorse as a justification for now commuting and losing all that extra time on those other days of the week.
Yeah, I wonder if it's seen as a little retaliatory on some of these employees' parts.
Yeah, as much as I mentioned the trust thing, I think with remote work being pulled back, there's a lot of distrust among employees, you know, with their employers. They thought that they were doing good work. They thought that they could have this freedom and have more time to themselves. And we're seeing a lot of frustration from workers who are now being told to go back into the office, despite, you know, there not being problems with their performance when they've been working from home. And this is happening on such a large scale from companies big and small, you know, around the country.
A large scale, like it's on TikTok, it's on Reddit. There's whole threads or pages devoted to this, right?
Yeah, there are lots of people, you know, either joking about it or sort of sharing their tips and tricks of how they maybe stay online.
Yeah, right. Give me an example. Yeah. Like, so what's the hack? What's the trick to persuading your boss you're still working when in fact you're not?
Yeah, it seems to be there's, you know, a combination because it really depends on your workplace, right, and how much you might be being surveilled or watched. There's definitely some people just, I think, want to seem online, like that little green glow next to their face on Slack, and all you really have to do for that is keep your laptop screen on, and you can do that by playing really long videos on there. I read somebody gave the tip of tying an oscillating fan to a mouse so it would drag back and
forth. I was going to say, get a cat and just have the cat play with your mouse all day.
Yeah, I included in the article an anecdote from my life. A friend and I were trying to get an early start to head out for a summer weekend once. I was off for the day. She was not, and she was driving, and she put her laptop in the back seat and put one of those like fireplace videos on where you just watch the burning log for 8 hours. So because that was playing for such a long time, she didn't have to worry about the video timing out. It would look like she was online, all of that. So there's all kinds of ways people are doing this. Some put their laptop in just present mode permanently. I've heard that that will also, you know, keep the laptop screen on. So a lot of these are, you know, not high tech tricks at all.
Texts include from 773, on Fridays, I go into the office to be with my teammates. We go out to lunch for 2 hours, and we drink at 3 o'clock. And the drinking part is the norm. It's not like we're sneaking around. 630, I've been doing four-day work weeks for 2 years. It's been a lifesaver. I use the extra day for errands, save money on childcare. Our family can enjoy the weekend. 708, our company has a flexible schedule. I do 3 12-hour days. It's the best. One more, 773. A five-day work week should be a thing of the past. Just because we always have done it doesn't mean it's right. I work 4 days in the office. One day off varies, but Friday's off during the summer. But that all sounds like people not sneaking around, but cooperating around with their employers. You acknowledge that, but you also say there's something else going on here, too.
Right. Yeah. All of those people sounded like they have agreements perhaps that are allowing them to do this. But there are definitely people where it seems their bosses haven't caught on to the fact they're doing this,
right,
which definitely raises the question of, do you need to work 5 days a week, or is your boss doing this as well? And to some extent, and that's why they're not, you know, noticing.
Right. How embarrassing if you bump into your boss at the ski slope on Friday. But I suppose that happens too. The story is the sneaky rise of no work Fridays. Amanda Hoover wrote it for businessinsider.com. Interesting stuff, Amanda. Thanks for your thoughts today.
Thanks so much.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN. More news now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. 100 employees at Northwest Community Hospital in Arlington Heights are being laid off by Endeavor Health. According to Cranes, it comes after the health system eliminated inpatient psychiatric services. Those services will end April 11th. The affected employees could take other positions within the organization. Endeavor Health says it's dealing with significant cost pressures and headwinds, but the number of impacted employees is relatively small given the size of the health system. The apparel and home goods retailer Anthropologie is planning to open a new store in Chicago in the Gold Coast neighborhood. The store will open at 1050 North State on the ground floor of the Newberry Plaza condo tower. Anthropologie recently closed locations at Block 37 and in the Clybourne corridor. An opening date has not been set for the new location. Anthropologie has other Chicago locations at 111 East Chicago, 1008 West Randolph, 3532 North Southport. Its suburban locations are in Oak Brook, Highland Park, and Schaumburg. I'm Steve Brzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time now for the business of food, and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And along with all the changes in D.C., there is a new ag secretary coming in. Brooke Rollins is the nominee to replace Tom Vilsack. He has had quite a run as ag secretary. He had the job for 8 years under President Obama, and then after 4 years off, had it again under President Biden. What he sees as the most important work of the USDA, after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. Okay, each ag secretary is honored with a portrait hanging in the USDA building in D.C. Tom Vilsack already has one there from his Obama years. He's okay if there's not a second one.
I know that if there were a second portrait, I'd look a lot older.
As for the work done during Vilsack's years at the helm?
During the Obama administration, we did a lot in nutrition. We had the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act and Mrs. Obama's Let's Move initiative.
And under President Biden?
We took the next step in that process. We increased and improved the school meal rule by focusing on added sugars, making it healthier. We looked at the SNAP program and said we need to recalculate it based on what's happening in the world today. We looked at the WIC program and said, you know, it's great, but it could be better. It could be modern. It could be providing online options. We looked at the opportunity for a meaningful summer feeding program. So in those 3 months between when school ends and when school starts, kids will continue to get a good meal. And we know from research that that works.
And one of his biggest concerns is the ongoing loss of farms.
Turns out we've lost a heck of a lot of farms, 544,970 of them. And I start totaling up, how many states does it take to get to 544,000? Well, it turns out 10 states. People go, whoa, well, this is something. Why is this? Now I've gotten people's attention.
As for his likely successor, her name is Brooke Rollins, and with tariffs and immigration, two areas of concern for farmers. She told her confirmation hearing that the USDA is ready to send out money again to farmers if they are damaged by tariffs, as happened during Trump 1.0. And as for concerns about farm workers being deported, she told the senators she supports the president's mass deportation policies, but is willing to work on reforming the H-2A migrant labor program. That would be long overdue. That can has been kicked down the road for decades. From the farm to your belly, it's National Croissant Day, or croissant. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Your hometown.
The Your Hometown Tour continues today with a stop in Romeoville, a lovely village named for the Shakespeare character. Stay with us and we'll show you why Romeoville should be your hometown. Sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Doing good and supporting Illinois communities.
12:53 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And yeah, our hometown today is Romeoville. By the way, as we go out there, I just wanted to take a minute to mention some of the comments in the last conversation we had with Amanda Hoover from Business Insider. She was talking about Sneaky Fridays, where you don't work real hard, maybe much at all on Fridays, and you're managing to still get the work done. John, as a business owner, I would never hire a person wanting a four-day week. People, grow up. Hey, John, I love your show. I work in a state psychiatric hospital. There's no way I could ever take off Fridays. I love my job. I wish I could have Fridays off. John, my daughter works for a major company in Dayton, Ohio. And while they offer various number of remote days based on your title, everyone has to be in the office on Friday. There's no remote option that day, and I think we know why. And finally, my dentist's office that I worked at in the 90s had a rotating schedule. Half the office got off Friday, the other half had to work. And you could tell on Monday morning who had a four-day work week and who had the dreaded five-day. It was human psychology at its best. Oh, and this listener says, I've been in sales for 30 years, working from home unless I'm traveling, and plenty of Friday afternoons. I'm at the golf course. Sometimes with customers. Yeah, being at the golf course may be business, huh? Here's Dan Bradley. He's the general manager of Mistwood Golf in Romeoville. Hi, Dan. You're on WGN. How are you?
I am excellent. I'm very happy to be on. Thanks for having me.
I suppose a day like today, I mean, if it gets to 50 degrees, can I go golf at your place or do you wait until the spring?
We wait until the spring. We have a dome, so we actually have an indoor option. We're open all 12 months a year, you know, in some capacity. So we have the Mistwood Golf Dome as well. But yeah, this is a spring feel today.
Tell me a little bit about your business.
Yeah, I mean we're Mistwood Golf Club, so we're a high end semi private. That means we're a public golf course. We do have members. So we're a high end facility in Romeoville, right? Very happy to be here. We've seen this city grow up all around us, and it's been fantastic. But no, we're the result of a family vision. So this was the vision of Jim McGwethy. He invested a tremendous amount of money in this property, in this golf course, years ago, and really built this to be a family legacy. So we are in an incredibly good situation. This is really just taken off. We're a private, it has a private feel to it, like a private club feel. We have private club feeling amenities, facilities, and it's really put us in a place to succeed.
I know that a lot of people that chart golf courses rank this as one of the better ones in the area. Is it a links style course?
It's a links style course, so it has that Scottish feel.
Yeah.
We have some of those deep sand traps that you see when, if you ever watch the, you know, the Open, the British Open on television. But you know, it's really not just the facility here. We're one of the highest rated golf courses in Illinois. But you know, the best part of Misswood is it's the environment. It's the people here. It's the energy here. You know, the people that work here love golf. Our members love golf. The other golfers that play here love golf. It just feels different when you're here.
Huh. So when do you guys open up? So I could go to the Dome, right? Do I make a reservation? Do you just show up? How does that go?
Yeah, the Dome. I mean, the Dome right now. We highly recommend reservations. Golf is more popular than ever right now. I think they said, what did they say? I think there's 26 million golfers that played on course last year. But then there's 18 million people that played only off course. So there's 18 million golfers that have never even been on a golf course because of facilities like the Misswood Golf Dome, like the Top Golf. Like, I mean, the industry is really taking off. So golf is here, and the Misswood Golf Dome is where it's happening this time of year. That's for sure.
I'm going to cut this conversation now. We're out of time. But then when are you open for the season outside, Dan?
Yeah, we're going to open in the spring. So it depends on the weather, but usually around the Masters. And that's when the golf boom takes off in Chicago area.
If you haven't been to Misswood, this is one to try right now, maybe inside, maybe outside when it gets warmer. The general manager is Dan Bradley, and you can find out more by clicking on Misswood GC, as in golf course, mistwoodgc.com. Dan, I'll see you out there. Thanks for your help today.
Take care. Thank you.
That's Dan Bradley.